You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, Health and Human Services, or HHS, State Department, or State, Transportation, Agriculture, Education, and the Social Security Administration. Now, the State Department's Inspector General found the agency couldn't account for 60% of the employees who had access to its classified network. That's a network which reports notes, quote, contain data that which, if disclosed to an unauthorized person, could cause grave damage to national security. And they can't account for 60% of the people that access this. That violates one of the most basic cybersecurity tenets: accurately manage your users' access to a secure network. It's so basic, and they don't know where 60% of their users are. They can't account for them. Thousands of workers' accounts were left open, and I quote, for as long as 152 days after employees quit, retired, or fired, creating an opportunity for attackers or unscrupulous ex-State Department employees to use those lingering logins to steal data. The Inspector General's proposed fix was simply this: do an account audit to find out who still has access, and then shut off the accounts. And then automatically shut off the accounts that have been inactive for 60 days. While that solution seems simple enough, the Inspector General noted that the department rejected the advice, apparently because officials didn't understand the recommendation. I kid you not. And let's move on to HUD, because HUD's Inspector General chided the agency for its rampant shadow IT, meaning the devices, software, and cloud services that are hooked up into the agency's network without the knowledge of the IT organization. We see this in companies all the time. You get that one person that walks in and says, well, you know, I don't have good wireless here, so I'm just going to bring in my wireless router from home and plug it into the network. And here we are. Now we've got something that's not being updated, not being managed as an asset, you know, could potentially reconfigure the network to change things. It's a huge, huge problem. Shadow IT is a huge nightmare for a lot of organizations, and HUD apparently is no different. Now, the Department of Transportation faces similar problems with nearly 15,000 mobile devices, servers, and workstations connected to its network without the IT department's knowledge. How do you have an IT department that does not understand, quantify, and know that there are 15,000 devices connected to it and it doesn't know where they are? It's unconscionable to me. Just, again, my day job being cybersecurity, it's crazy. Now, the report notes that, quote, IT staff may not learn of the existence of a shadow system until it fails or is breached. Terrifying. That is terrifying. Now, 7 of the 8 agencies in the report, quote, used legacy systems or applications no longer supported by the vendor with security updates. These agencies rely on software that's so old that the manufacturer has gone out of business or actually stopped bothering to create security patches for it. For example, Internet Explorer. Never use Internet Explorer. It is out of date. It is no longer viable. Microsoft doesn't update it. They've created a new browser, Edge, not to mention other competitors like Chrome and Firefox and all of that. So that's what we're talking about here. The transportation department, for example, still uses Windows 2008, which Microsoft stopped supporting 5 years ago. Basically, that is crazy. The Department of Homeland Security is still using an outdated and unsupported version of Windows, even after the agency's inspector general pointed it out in 6 consecutive annual reports. Now, HUD relies on several, quote-unquote, mission essential applications that, and I quote again, have not been modernized in decades, according to the report. So obviously, super vulnerable to cyber attack. The agency's inspector general has been calling this out, basically this outdated software, quote, in every annual evaluation since fiscal year 2013. So basically, for like 8 or 9 years, this has been out there. But HUD has struggled to invest in new modern software because the majority of its information security budget is spent on the maintenance of legacy systems. And this is the perfect example. HUD is a perfect example of what we call technical debt. Because it has waited so long to modernize its network, it has become very costly to make the necessary upgrades, but it's also very expensive just to keep the lights running on old systems. The only way basically to get out of this is to spend the money. You got to suck it up and you got to spend the money to revamp the network because it only gets worse. And we see this a lot. Well, it's so expensive maintaining this database, but, you know, by virtue of that, we don't have the budget to buy something to replace it. And so we don't. We just maintain it, and it just keeps becoming a growing problem. That is the core of the United States government right there, essentially telling us that they are not prepared. They are not secured. They don't have visibility or control into the actual government and the operations of it. Right now, and I kid you not, and this is not hyperbole, there literally could be Chinese, Russian, Iranian, North Korean attackers that have taken over accounts, that have possibly inserted devices onto networks where they have no, like the IT staff of the government has no visibility into it, and they could be recording and sending data out right now. Now, during the pandemic, I actually interviewed Michael Daniel. If you don't know who he was the White House cybersecurity advisor under President Obama. And in that interview, you can go see it on my YouTube channel at YouTube/Nick Espinoza. He actually says, oh, back in 2013, we knew the Chinese were in the network. We knew the Chinese government was getting in there, and we'd push them out and they'd slink away. But by the end of his tenure as the White House cybersecurity advisor, they were aggressively pushing back. The actual remote Chinese hackers were fighting back, to basically break into the White House, which they had successfully done. And that's the White House. That's the head of the executive branch. That's the headquarters, rather. So that's crazy. It's crazy to me that we are in this position. And so now we have a new budget that's supposed to spend about 3% of the actual fiscal budget on cyber defense strategy. And I'm wondering, is that enough? Are we actually, doing this enough? You know, I'm not a huge fan of overtaxing anything or everything or regulating over anything and everything, but to have a functional government means we need to have a secure and operational government. And if we ever, God forbid, get into a war, who's to say that they couldn't immediately launch cyber attacks and shut down the heads of all of the core infrastructures of the United States? And again, that's not hyperbole. That's a Senate report. That's an actual audit from inspectors generals that is informing me of the words that I am saying. It's crazy. So those are your breaches of the week. If you're sitting here listening to me in the United States, you absolutely were affected by virtue of this government report. Or if you're a T-Mobile user, go check in with T-Mobile. But were you affected outside of that? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is actually on Mike Lindell and his cyber symposium. Now, if you don't know who Mike Lindell is, he is the multimillionaire CEO known as the MyPillow guy, and he has been an ardent supporter of President Trump for years. And in the aftermath of the 2020 election, where claims of fraud, basically came out, Mike Lindell has been one of the most vocal people in the Trump camp, saying that the election was stolen. And for months, he has put out videos and documentaries and statements and all this kind of stuff. But in the last few months, he has said that he was going to launch a cyber symposium, basically between August 10th and August 12th. And that's exactly what he did. Now, he claimed that he was going to bring incontrovertible evidence there that showed things like packet captures and other cybersecurity and forensic evidence that proved the election was essentially hacked. And so I watched all three. And if you want to know about the cybersecurity and forensic side of his symposium, I break it down right now. So that's what we're going to do. That's our deep dive of the week. Now, minus about 4 hours of it, thanks to my actual day job, because the radio is not my day job, I watched or listened basically to the entire thing from start to finish, and I caught up on those 4 hours after it, and I found it online. Now, I also live tweeted about this throughout the entire event. So if you want to know the actual minutia of my thoughts, you can go find me on Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Start at the beginning of August 10th, and you will see about, 200 tweets or so of me going through and breaking this down very specifically. Obviously, I don't have that kind of time here, so this will be more of a top level, but we will get to my conclusions at the end. Also, I was also afraid that I was going to miss a lot of this because Mr. Lindell stated right out of the gate that this would be nonstop for 72 hours without breaks, and I actually need my beauty sleep. Unfortunately, that didn't end up being the case. They broke every day about 9 p.m. Central Time. That's where South Dakota is. And they started up again 9 a.m. Central Time every day. Now, before I dive into the core of my assessment, which I don't think is going to be that long, or at least not as long as I thought it was going to be when I started writing my notes for this, I want to lay down some ground rules for my analysis. So basically, you understand that where I am approaching this. And I do this for basically anything that I'm analyzing to make sure that everybody has an understanding of the framework that I'm approaching with this. So to begin, rule number one, I am not analyzing the politics of this event or the people. Obviously, you have your own opinions on this. They have their own opinions on this. If they align or not, it's not my business. And a good chunk of this event obviously talked politics, and that was not my focus at all. If you think I'm going to sit here and talk about the politics of this, that is not my focus at all. I don't care what your politics are. I'm watching this as a cybersecurity expert and nothing more. Which brings us to point number two. Basically, this deep dive is focused on the cybersecurity information and evidence and basically how any cybersecurity professional would approach and validate this evidence. This is not going to cover the discussions and claims that people on stage made that their local or state auditors did something to cover up the election or commit fraud. I'm a cybersecurity person, so I'm sticking to cybersecurity. And so basically, there were a lot of claims that, oh, well, you know, my county rigged it, or my county did this, or my state did that. It's all well and good. I am not reviewing that evidence because I am not qualified to. I am a nerd, and so I'm sticking to the nerd things. And that's it. And please, I would really appreciate it if my audience didn't send me like emails that say, you suck, Nick. Trump is the rightful president and Lindell is amazing. Or conversely, you suck, Nick. Trump is awful and Lindell is horrible messages. I'm not going to respond to those. And I've been delayed in responding, basically due to work to some of you that have sent me emails and messages. And so thank you very much for that. I promise you, I will return your messages. Now, here's what I'm doing. I'm keeping this only with the evidence that they presented. That's it. If my analysis of that evidence agrees or disagrees with your political beliefs, that is not my intent. That's fine, but it's not my intent. I am only looking at this from basically this perspective, and that is my final point. I am going to be approaching this as if I was personally being called as an expert witness for a trial and had to prove or disprove evidence and why. So if I basically got called as an expert witness to review this evidence for, you know, on behalf of Mike Lindell or on behalf of the other side, I'm going to independently review this to see if it's good, bad, or simply non-existent. And that's it. And so with that, let's begin with a rather basic premise before I actually start diving into each day. And we will go through this in each day. And the question or the basic premise for the analysis is, how do we know that evidence is legitimate? We have to understand that before we actually start approaching and looking at evidence. Now, at its core, lawyers and judges, the entire legal system, understands that evidence can be fabricated against someone or some entity. It is important to understand that the evidence that shows up in court to accuse or defend someone or an entity is actually real and not fabricated or tampered with. For basically a forensic investigation, this actually starts with the chain of custody. That's what it's called, the chain of custody. Now, let me put this into plain English here. The chain of custody is the understanding of where the evidence came from, who has handled it, and how it has maintained its integrity, meaning that nobody altered or tampered with it for any reason, and that is verifiable. And I will give you this example. This is a true life case for my actual day job, not the radio. I was called into a case by attorneys to forensically examine an iPhone and also recover what were believed to be incriminating text messages. So basically, I first verified that the iPhone actually belonged to the person in question. Then we made a forensic image of that phone, which is essentially a duplicate of the phone that cannot be altered after it's made. This image was verified by the two parties, both sides of the trial here. Both parties verified this because they witnessed me duplicate that iPhone to ensure fairness. And then I went ahead and recovered the deleted messages, again, verified by each party who received a copy of this information. I did this in front of everybody, both sides. Now, I then store that information in basically and the image in a logged and encrypted container, meaning if anybody wanted access to that container for any reason, they would have to log in and there would be a record of their attempt or their actual accessing of that data. And that is how we do this. Now, during the entire process, there essentially would be no way for me to alter or tamper the data to support one side or the other, as each side witnessed me perform this task and receive duplicate copies that I, as a third party, also stored for reference. So basically, none of the three parties can tamper anything because we've all got the evidence. That holds up in court. Now, imagine if I did this work alone at the behest of only one of these parties. What do you think the end result's going to be? I am going to get accused of working with that party to fabricate the evidence if that evidence basically goes against the party that wasn't there. That's the problem. And so in the case of something like a voting machine, that forensic image that they would want to take would also have to be done by an independent third party with witnesses from both sides of the aisle, in this case, a Republican and a Democratic representative, to basically understand it's going to be tamper-free. Prior to that image being taken, there would also need to be a chain of custody for the machine itself. Who owns it? Where is it stored? Can it be accessed in private without any kind of logging? Meaning, are there video cameras watching them 24/7 with recordings? Or can somebody walk in and do something to it and nobody would know? So that is what we are talking about here. These things have to be validated. And if we don't have a clear understanding of this, then that evidence is suspect. And if that evidence was put into court, this would get the evidence thrown out if it couldn't be validated. That's a huge, huge thing. So if we don't have that understanding, it is suspect. Just to reiterate, it could have been fabricated, it could have been planted, it could have been altered, it could even be legitimate, but without the chain of custody, any one of those could actually be true. So with that, let's start with the first day. And much of this, for the record, and my notes here as I'm talking to you, are taken from my actual tweets. Again, just a fraction of them because I did a lot, but I was doing that constantly. And so first, I want to say I've spoken at or simply attended hundreds of cybersecurity tech conferences in my lifetime. This was unlike any one that I have ever seen, and that the majority of the time wasn't actually talking about technology for the evidence of fraud or anything like that. A lot of it was political discussions. A lot of it were people anecdotally telling stories of how they witnessed something. It was nothing like a tech conference or a cybersecurity conference I've ever seen. So I want to start with that. But sticking to the evidence, Mr. Lindell and basically various other speakers or panelists that he had spoke of Mr. Lindell having what are known as PCAP files taken from voting machines that prove that these machines were actually communicating with the Chinese government. So I was very anxious to get that information. I wanted them to release this data. I wanted it to be reviewed in depth. And basically, in as plain English as I can make it, PCAP files basically show the packet capture, PCAP packet capture, from network traffic as one device or computer communicates to another device or computer, basically with each other or out to the internet, and as the internet responds back. It's basically going to show us this. Now, while a PCAP file isn't going to show us exactly how a voting machine is programmed to cheat an election, it would show us if the voting machine was phoning home somewhere on the internet, and if the internet was responding to it, and also what protocols they were using to establish that connection. So there you are. Mr. Lindell, though, and his team never actually displayed these alleged PCAP files to the audience. We never saw them. He had claimed that he had these from these actual voting machines, and he didn't put them out there for the world. We didn't see them. Now, what we got instead was a demonstration on basically the packet capture software Wireshark, which is a free utility. And I don't think they mentioned it by name, but as soon as I saw Wireshark, I knew they were using Wireshark. And so they showed us what a Wireshark packet capture looks like. And that's well and good, but that's not evidence. Now, as a response on Twitter, I ran my own Wireshark packet capture on my network here, and I posted an image, and you can see my computers hitting Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all of that, and them responding. But there you go. I like demonstrations as well, but I'll say again, a demonstration is not evidence. I can show you how to rob a bank, but that doesn't mean the bank was actually robbed, and that's what we got. And honestly, outside of other discussions during day one, that was the only real cybersecurity anything that happened. An algorithm expert, quote unquote, explained how basically a voter scam would work. But again, an explanation, like a demonstration, is not evidence. And when they winded this down, I wrote on Twitter, and I quote, minus the hashtags, Mike Lindell at the Cyber Symposium shutting down for evening. I literally watched all day, and from a forensics court evidence perspective, as a professional in cybersecurity, I can say I saw zero evidence that would hold up in court. Disappointing from the cyber perspective. That was day one. Now, day two, and much of this is taken, again, from tweets, so I'm hoping I'm not going to stumble here over my words, obviously minus the hashtags, but the first expert in the morning at the Cyber Symposium was a former state senator from Michigan named Patrick Kolbeck that had a Microsoft Small Business Specialist certification, and that he mentioned he's, quote-unquote, built a few networks in his day. Now, it's a fine certification to have for IT, but IT is not cybersecurity, and it's not forensics. And to his credit, former state senator of Michigan, Kolbeck, basically said he wasn't an expert. So basically, he explained the chain of custody, and basically that he did it pretty well, to be perfectly honest, but he explained it how it relates to voting and also explained how you break it. Meaning, how, let's say, could you break voters to insert more votes or change votes and all of that because you've broken the chain of custody? And he did a pretty good job at that. You know, he really did. Again, though, explanations and demonstrations aren't evidence. He mentioned the entire chain was broken in the election and states, basically, and he stated that they have evidence and affidavits of this. But okay, show us the evidence. I want to see it. I know how to read a PCAP file. I know how to read all of these things. Now, that basically brought us to the main event, which was the second speaker of the day. And again, just here we go. So these are taken from my tweets, and bear with me here because I think it's accurate. And the reason why I'm using this is because I did this live as I was watching it. So it's the best evidence I've got of what I saw. So I quote myself in some way, shape, or form. Okay, here's a serious problem with the Cyber Symposium claim of evidence, and hear me out here. The first speaker walked the audience through why the chain of custody is beyond important for voting. That if that chain is broken, we can have fraud in election. He's right about that. However, chain of custody for any evidence is beyond important as it helps verify the evidence as legitimate, including evidence of election fraud. The first speaker also primed the audience that we'd see evidence live shortly as Ron Watkins, aka Code Monkey, aka, and I kid you not, Q himself most likely, from QAnon. Many people, including an HBO documentary, point to Ron Watkins as just starting the whole QAnon thing, and there we go with that. So Ron Watkins would spend hours with us sifting through this evidence to show us how the voting machines were hit. Now, they also mentioned that Mr. Watkins had not seen this data prior to basically this symposium. So this would be a live dissection of forensic evidence. That's great. I have been waiting to essentially review this in depth. I'm waiting for this. Now, after numerous technical difficulties, Mr. Watkins, who via video conference is introduced, and right out of the gate, he states that the data he would be working with is, quote unquote, allegedly two forensic images from a Dominion server. Now, these images are supposed to be before and after a software update that, quote unquote, prove the server was manipulated to change votes. But here's the thing. They immediately broke the cardinal rule. Verify the chain of custody. They literally pounded chain of custody into the audience and then promptly forgot it when it came to their own evidence. Mr. Watkins repeated the word allegedly multiple times, and then he said he was quote unquote told that the first forensic image was from 2019. This is a massive chain of custody violation. I can create forensic images. I just told you, that I had a case with that. It's not actually hard to do. Anyone could have mocked these up to look like anything, including a Dominion server. They also stated that these were found publicly on the internet and would be giving out a link, and they never sent that link out. Still waiting for that. So for all we know, these images are actually part of an actual disinformation campaign from a foreign government. Or maybe they're 100% legitimate, but without that understanding, it is 100% suspect and cannot be trusted. Objectively, it cannot hold up in court. Imagine fabricating evidence of a crime and then the legal system doesn't verify it's authentic, but still uses it to convict you. And that's essentially what this is. And they didn't even go through the entire image. They started poking around. There was no formality of how Mr. Watkins started going through these images to look through logging and everything. He was just poking around to see what he could see. And then the whole thing was abruptly stopped when, according to Mr. Watkins, his lawyer advised him to stop doing this because these may have been allegedly stolen from somewhere. And so they just stopped showing that information altogether. That's probably why they didn't even send out the link. So there you go. Now, the rest of day two, and to be perfectly honest, all of day three were more demonstrations and discussions. We got no direct evidence that cybersecurity experts like myself could examine. They just didn't present it. And so to reinforce this, cybersecurity expert Robert Graham was also there live and tweeting, and he confirmed that third-party experts like him were there in person, and they received no data either. Basically, you can go to his Twitter feed. It's at @ErrataRob, and you can go see everything that he did day-to-day. He was actually in the audience. Robert Graham didn't get to see any of that in person, and no links to download were sent to him. And so basically what the audience of cybersecurity experts, and he was independently invited, not on Mike Lindell's or MyPillow's payroll. He was there as an independent observer wanting, like me, the evidence for this, and got nothing.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.